Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Punch, Kick, Choke Chat. My friends, my name is Sean Benson. I'm one of your hosts, and tonight is a host's chat. So as we've been doing with our host chat, we actually stick with the intros that we used to do before every episode, and I love that. I love that we actually get to break open who we are a little bit more. So when we do this, it's my pleasure to introduce Sensei Nicolaus Suino. He's an 8th Dan in Muso Jikiden Ishin Ryu Iaido. He's a 6th Dan in Judo, a 6th Dan in Jiu-Jitsu, the founder and runner of the Japanese Martial Arts Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And he is the creator there of something we're going to talk about tonight called the Crucible. Now, I don't want to break open that too much, but when we were doing this 12 hours of physical and mental and spiritual testing with like barely any breaks, I think we established, Sensei Suino, that you were the oldest person in the room, yes? And I looked to you for your boundless energy more than once. More than once was I like, I'm fading. He's not. I'm going to grab that. So A, thank you. And B, how do you tell anyone watching what your secret is for being the oldest person in the room and somehow fading less than everyone, if not like 1%.
Well, thank you for that. And I loved having you there. I loved the fact that it was a reprise of something we did 7 years ago that got you into grappling. That was a really wonderful moment. I don't know. Don't let the old man in. Didn't somebody on this call say that at one time?
It has been said.
I hate the idea of getting old. I detest it. So I don't let it happen. Now, to be fair, I do about half the workout that everybody else on the in the program does, because I'm the MC, right? I'm the showrunner. I'm the guy that keeps everything going. So you guys are busting your ass. But we'll talk about a little when we get to the Crucible. What I love is walking around the room after 8 hours. People have been training 8 hours. I love walking around the room and looking at everybody's eyes. And people will look at me. They're like, are you okay? What are you doing? And I'm staring at their eyes. As out of the, you know, 50 people or whatever, most of the time they're fine, but you get those one or two people where you see and they're just the 1,000-yard stare. And those are the people you got to look at, because something, right? Their blood sugar's bad. They're too exhausted. They need a boost. They need to sit. They need to hydrate. And I just like, I like that. I think what I get jazzed about is helping other people make it through an experience that terrifies them in the beginning. And then they end up better, man. It's great. Thanks for being there, Sean. It was super fun.
Sensei, it's my absolute pleasure. And one button I want to put on this before you do your intro is, you know, I cite your ranks when we do the longer intro. But I challenge a lot of people, when they achieve certain ranks, to still put on their gi and sweat through it for 12 hours. Like I ask a lot of people listening, whether it's in their car, whether it's at home, when was the last time you did that? Now, is it 12 hours? Who knows? But when's the last time you took off a gi that was almost too heavy to hold because of the sweat? Once you got a second Dan or a third Dan or a fourth Dan, I'm sure a lot of you can say yesterday, but I bet you a lot of you are going, I don't remember the last time I did that. So I'm throwing that out because I'm getting that from you and also you, Sensei, no offense. So thanks for that.
Yeah. Well, I love it. And one of the, when Hanchi is an inspiration on that, because long and long ago, he said to me, and I know to other people, that the biggest or best title that you'll ever have in martial arts is that of a student. And keeping that mindset really helps me, because you gotta learn, man. You gotta learn. Somebody else that was instrumental in helping this Crucible come about and be as successful as it was is Sensei Randy Dauphin, who's sitting two thumbnails to my right, who he helped set it up. He helped bring a lot of people to the event. He helped teach a huge portion of the event. And I think, as our viewers know, he's a 7th Dan in Legacy Karate, Legacy Shorinru. He's a 4th Dan in Muso Jikiden Ishin Ryu Iaido, just an instrumental figure in so many of our lives, making sure that we train hard, making sure that our events go well, and all together we're kind of growing our martial arts presence. And a big part of that is that he's at the tip of the spear. Randy, how are you doing?
Doing good, but I'll be honest with you, since, you know, my energy levels have been low this week. After the Crucible, like, I've just been, you know, I'm still doing my two workouts a day, teaching my classes, but I just find myself not feeling quite as intense about it as I normally do. Right. I'm probably somewhere around, if I'm on a normal day when I come in here, if I'm training hard at like a 9 intensity, I'm probably somewhere around a 7.5 right now. And you know what? That's okay. I'm giving myself permission this week to to be like that. And then after the weekend, it goes back to the way it was. I'm shifting it back. So thanks for that introduction. And thanks, Cesarino, for inviting me down there and letting me play a leadership role in the Crucible. I love it. I'm really proud to be down there doing those things. And representing Sets of Legacy and yourself on the floor is always a point of pride for me. So thank you. And now I get to introduce Sets of Legacy. And I was thinking about it. What Sets of Legacy and I have built together is a relationship that I think is something that is, a lot of people say they have a relationship like that, but they don't, right? Like they think they do, you know. When you could be in a room at a tournament with 600 people in a room on the other side of the room, and somehow you could just feel your sensei looking at you and you turn and you guys can meet eyes with each other. And without any words being spoken, you know, there's something that you got to go do and you actually know what it is that you need to go do. That's a pretty cool thing. And that happens a lot of times with Sensei Legacy and I. Sensei Legacy is the 10th man in Legacy Shorinru Karate Jitsu. He's also a 10th Dan in Matsumura Hakatsuru. He was given that rank by Anthony Sandoval, but in addition to Sensei Sandoval, he's trained with some really like top-notch instructors through his career. He started with Harold Warden. This is my opinion. I always say probably the most influential person in Sensei Legacy's early days was Benny Allen, just giving him that physicality, how to strike, that training intensity, all of those things. And then training with Richard Kim for 10 years, Master Kim, that classical side, that deep thinking. It really, when I look at the teachers Sensei Legacy's had, it's the perfect combination of instructors to build somebody to where they are right now. And I do want to say also, Sensei Legacy didn't ever stop training with any of those people. The relationship ended for different reasons, or he still would be training with Richard Kim, or he'd still be training with Benny Allen. Well, probably not, because they're both passed away now, but it wasn't his fault that those relationships ended. It was on the other side of things. So obviously I'm also super proud to be Sensei Legacy student. Sensei Suino will nod his head when at the Crucible, I made it really well known as I was teaching that I didn't come up with any of this stuff on my own, that I was just ripping off Sensei Legacy unabashed about all the things I was instructing them on. So thanks for that, Sensei Legacy. How are you doing tonight?
Fine. Good. Just, I feel bad. I didn't get to this event that you're having for 12 hours, but I don't know if I wouldn't fall asleep. I not likely would, but I may try it next time.
I hope you do.
Yeah.
Did someone say next time?
Yeah, the next one's going to be next level. Do we want to talk about that now?
Is it time?
Let me just quickly throw out to the audience a little bit of housekeeping, which is real simple. If you're here on the Zoom call, we're so happy you're with us. And throughout the night, we want you to fire us our questions that Robert's going to throw up in the bottom, a little red button right now in the chat. And that makes you a part of this living history. And when we do it tonight, we want you to put your camera on. You don't have to, but we ask that if you'd like to, we'd be happy to have you. And that way you can ask your question on camera and be part of the deal. So that's really all I wanted to say. Other than that, if you're listening on a podcast or you're watching on YouTube a little later, not during the time, hit subscribe, hit like, and definitely share with your friends, because that's massive, sensei.
Also, I kind of said to people, I've sent some messages out and said, if you have some memories from the Matsumura Challenge, or you have some memories from the Crucible that you want to share with us, something you liked, then we want to hear it. So
brilliant.
You don't have a question, but you have something you want to share, you could do that too.
Love that. Love that. So yeah, let's jump into some Crucible chat. What were we just alluding to?
Well, here's the thing, Sean. I feel like we need to do this in chronological order. If we start giving away the secrets of the future Crucible before we've talked about the Matsumura Challenge or the past Crucible or all the other things that stand between it and then, I think we're doing ourselves and our guests a disservice, because I know there's some folks that have been to one or both of the recent events, and I'd love to hear from them. I want to tell you a little bit as a visitor to the Matsumura Challenge. I want to tell you how thrilling that was and how much fun it was. I got there a little bit late because I had to drive up from Michigan in the morning. And when I walked in, I couldn't even see what was going on because the crowd of people on the bleachers and around the bleachers was so big. So I'm standing there behind a bunch of tall people, hearing the talk and the key eyes and the announcements, and I can smell the sweat, and I'm like, man, I can't see a damn thing. What do I do? Should I go up on the bleachers? And then I remembered, hey, wait a minute, I'm an effing VIP. Screw all this. And so I just walked across the tape and went to where the judges were standing. I'm gonna stand over there for the rest of the time. But it was so kick-ass. I got to hang around, talk to a bunch of people I really, really love, and watch people fight, watch people do kata. We had the Pan-Canadian under 17-year-old women's kata champion there who was insane. I saw a bunch of you guys fighting. I got really itchy watching everybody fight. I think there's no possible way that JMAC people are not going to show up and do some stuff in that next year if we are invited. The energy level, the organization, the quality of martial arts, the kindness of the people. You know, I've been to hundreds and hundreds of martial arts events in my life. That was great, man. I can't wait for the next one. It was awesome.
It was amazing to have you there. I was in the corner reffing, and quite literally 2 feet behind me, I hear a voice, and I dismiss it because I'm so used to your voice, but I'm not used to it over my right ear. Hey, maybe we're not going to talk about that, but I'm not used to it in public over my right ear. And I'm like, what the, that can't be. And then it was just beautiful. Sensei Dauphin, I want to ask Hanshi about like the early years and the growth, but I want to ask you about the recent growth. Like, what do you attribute this being double the size of the 2019, which was already the largest one we'd ever had? What's that about?
Well, there's lots of work, but I think it's the stuff we're doing right now. I think this is part of it. You know, our tournament is an invitational tournament. And I don't know how many times did I call you since I see like 15 times to say, this person has called us and said, can they come to the tournament? And you said, then Sensei Legacy would say, okay, tell them, but give them the speech about, you know, how we run our tournament and what it's going to be like. So I think it's Punch Kick Choke Chat. I think it's the fact that we've done World Martial Arts Live. I feel like it's because we've gone to Capital Conquest, and, you know, just our level of exposure has grown so much. And I think it's also a testament to us that we must be doing something good with the quality of our martial arts and the type of people that we are, that people want to come to that event. And so I think it's all of us. I think it's the work that we're all doing together. And that's why I think it's growing.
Personally. Yeah, I mean, the work you're putting in and the people you're having help is just astonishing, and it's more than ever. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's that thing we talk about. You're the average of the five people you hang out with. But that means that excellent people are choosing us to be one of their five. You know, like, we're choosing excellent people, but they're also saying, yeah, we want you in our, what is it, my five, back in the cell phone days. Yeah. But like, that's a privilege when, you know, the people show up and you're like, okay, like you said, we must be doing something right if this is who's coming and wanting to put their time and their energy and their money and their gas money into what we're doing.
Sark, Sean, before you go on, one thing that we can't overlook is the people who instantly came back that have been coming for like 40 years, like that just instantly when we were having the tournament all came back. Like Sensei Copeland, Pete Daypuck. I know that Sensei Canispo couldn't be there, but his students were there. Like instantly all those people came back.
Yep.
So we had all that core, all the root, and then all these new people came as well. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off though.
No, that's great. And then Hanshi, let's talk. I mean, those roots, like this is your tournament. This is the Matsumura Challenge. Like those early days, where did you see the big growths coming from, leading to the really big tournament now?
Well, in the early days, it was a closed tournament. It was just amongst all of our dojos. We have 11 dojos. We just kept it amongst ourselves. I didn't like watching some of the, or going to some of the tournaments because of the differences in opinions and stuff like that. And sport karate persons, which there is a place for everyone. And I'm not saying that sports karate tournaments are not good. I'm just saying that I just wanted to keep that separate from our guys because we're classical minded, right? And I think what people really, once it got started, then I actually had friends asking if they could come. That's how it became an invitational. Mm. I think it's the fairness, right? And top quality talent that comes. We often have world champions come to our little Shi'ai to hone themselves up for their big events, you know, because there's good competition there. You know, like Wilfred Zaratan, how long has he been competing? And you don't just beat him. If you beat him, very seldom, like in over 40 years, has he lost. And he has come in second once or twice. You know, it's just good quality like that. Friendships, just meeting up with guys you haven't seen for a long time. Because, you know, like Billy Hines, some of our students of Benny Allen came this time. Hmm. Just to be together. So it's a good way for everybody to meet up. Good classical senseis who know, you know, who like to be in their crowd. But sometimes, again, you go to tournaments and they have different rules. There are a lot of different ways of doing a tournament. Ours is fair and friendly. And if anybody breaks any of those rules, we just tell them not to come back. Sorry.
And so a question I have, I kind of know the answer, but for people listening, everybody's going to claim the tournament's fair, but what do you put forth as why it's fair?
Who are you asking?
Ahanchi Legacy.
Okay, well, mainly we handpicked the center referees who have been coming for a long time. Hmm. And if anything goes wrong, they know if a person, say, is favoring somebody, they will themselves ask for me and I will remove that person.
Right.
We don't shy away from being fair. We don't do it for our own students. We don't do it for anybody else's student. You have to actually heighten your talents to win at our dojo, at our Shi'ai.
Sensei Dofan, I saw you really nodding along with the fair idea too. So I do want to ask you that.
Yeah, listen, Sean, you know, you've competed in it. You competed in it this time. I thought you did great. I, by the way, loved your cut. And you and Sensei Saratan fighting each other, that was like an outstanding fight that could have gone either way at any point. And now you guys got to fight again because in 2019, you beat him and you won. And now this time he beat you and he won the fighting. So you guys got to have a rubber match.
Run it back. Let's run it back.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, I shouldn't give away secrets, but I will. If you want your tournament to run really good, have good people at the table who work really well with the center referees. If you have 5 good center referees, right, and 10 good people at the table, your tournament's going to go smooth. All you need is somebody at the head table announcing the divisions and paying attention, and somebody like Sensei Legacy going around and making sure everything's fair. Those are like the critical pieces of the tournament, right? The 5 centers, the people at the table, the head table, keeping the thing going, and the person milling around to make sure that everything's going fair. And we received 0 complaints. With 600 people in the room, we received 0 complaints. Nothing. It's
literally unheard of. Like there's not a thing in the world that can have 600 people and not a complaint.
Not one.
By the way, one thing that I love, you know, is that it's made really clear that Ahanchi Legacy is the final arbiter if something comes up. And yes, it's that it's you, Ahanchi, but the fact that it's so clear who it is and that there is one, I think that makes everybody feel covered. You know, everybody's like, okay, I at least have somewhere to go if there's an issue. There's somewhere outside this ring I can go to if there's an issue. And somebody who's not going to make sure their student wins. Soon as that happens, everybody doesn't even need to complain at that point. Yeah.
There are sometimes mistakes, you know, there are to look on the other side, nothing is perfect, but sometimes there are mistakes, but we correct them right away. And I think that's important. Another important factor is that the senseis are not the type of senseis who send their students. They're the type of senseis who bring them. And you may not think that's a lot, but it is. that means a lot, because they're also, it's like you're going to a party, or okay, let's say you're going out somewhere and then your parents bringing you. It's a different type of event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
here's an example of how fair the instructors are that come. So Kiyoshi Adet Rice from Driftwood comes to our tournament. She sits at the head table and she accumulates all the points for the grand championships. And she brought 60 competitors. She could sit there and cheat if she wanted to, and like nobody would be able to tell. But no, none of her competitors won the grand championship. They all did great. Like, I mean, her competitors are outstanding. But it's just an example of the type of person that you can trust to sit there, help you do a job all day. She came at 9 o'clock in the morning and she left at 7 o'clock at night, and she worked the entire time. Stacy Copeland went in the ring at 9 o'clock in the morning. He didn't leave until 7 o'clock at night. And he was fair. Like, when his guys missed the division, he said, "They're out. You called their name. I heard you call the division. You called their name. They didn't show up. I don't care. They missed their division. I'll deal with them back in the dojo." Right? Like, that's the way these people are when they come to our tournament. I love it. I like watching them operate. I learn a lot.
The other thing too, that I always tell my students going in, and myself, you're paying for a judge's opinion. Don't be mad when they give it. You know, the UFC, if there's no knockout, it's a judge's opinion. Any Olympic event that isn't timed, it's a judge's opinion. The Matsumura Challenge, judge's opinion. And yeah, I love the excitement of reffing almost as much as the excitement of competing, because you're really just like looking for that kata, looking for that point. It was, this is just about me right now, but I've never been more engaged in a tournament when I wasn't competing than this time, because of what you said, Hanshi, the level of competitor that showed up. So Justin, like, what's that?
We had like 80 black belt competitors. Like, yeah. It was so many black belt competitors. Like the women's 18 to 18 plus black belt fighting division had like 21 women in it competing. It's outstanding. Like, I was so excited about that.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Justin Shea wants to pop on and talk a little about his experience at the tournament.
Let's hear what Justin Shea has to say.
Yes. Justin Shea, who Sensei Suino might have won himself a medal doing some of your art.
Interesting enough, huh?
Interesting enough.
Hey, senseis, how are you doing?
It's great tonight. Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see all of you. Yeah. I guess the biggest thing for the tournament for me was it was a lot of risk, because I changed a lot of things. Like, it was the first time I was competing with Goju Shiho. It was the first time I was competing with the Aido. And I changed my mindset completely. So that's what I remember of this tournament. It's just, I've changed a lot of things, putting everything on the line.
What do you mean your mindset? Explain.
So I used to, you know, be the typical competitor, want to win, want to grab for the gold. But in this particular tournament, I decided to say to myself, the judges want to see you at your best. And that instantly just calmed me down. My heart rate went down. My breathing just slowed completely. And then I just did like I would do it as if I were on my own without any pressure. So it was a liberating feeling.
Well, I'm happy for you, Justin, because I know you've been in the medals a couple of times, but you've never actually won the Matsumura Challenge. And winning the black belt kata division at the Matsumura Challenge is not easy to do. And I'm proud of you for doing it. And you also won in weapons too, which is both interesting and awesome, because you did the Aido.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was funny because actually before, when I was trying to find a weapon to do, I actually knew that the kata that I know for my weapon wouldn't win. So I had to figure out a way whether to choose whether to do the Aido or roll the dice with the Aido or do a kata that I knew would win. So decided to roll the dice, and this is how it came out, and just happened to be on top. That's all, this time.
Would you say the difference in your performance this time is that instead of overcoming your own mistakes, that you just emptied your mind and let your training shine through?
Hi, Sensei. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, because I was starting to get that detached feeling that Sensei Dauphin always talks about. I'm starting to get there. Not quite there yet, but I was starting to get there.
You know, there's a cool historical parallel, because when I was competing in Tokyo, right, I'm in front of 300, 400, 500, 600 Japanese training in Iaido. And although you always have a little bit of adrenaline when you're in front of an audience, I was never that nervous about it, because the only person whose opinion mattered to me was my teachers.
Mm.
That's a great way of thinking of it, Sensei. Yeah.
Well, Justin, I was in the division with you for kata, and I came silver to your gold. And I love my kata. I love how I did it. It might be the best I've ever done it at a tournament, and maybe one of the best I've ever done. And when I watched your kata, I just went, that edges mine out. And it was an excellent kata, but I also judged your Iaido. And I remember what Hanshi said at the beginning, you know, if you don't necessarily, you're not comparing styles. And if you don't know a style, then you're looking at the athleticism, the stance, the execution, all that. But the way you strung together your cuts, and then within the standard by which we can compare different styles, yeah, it was superlative for sure. There wasn't a bobble. There wasn't a stumble. There wasn't a misstep. The focus was really, for me, what I ranked you top marks. Everyone can see my marks. It's not a secret. Based on that, the mental focus.
Yeah. You know, tell you what the secret was for Justin. He trained. He came in here on his own independently. He opened the door. He turned the heat on. He came by himself. He practiced his katas. He stayed late after class. He came early. And he practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And that's... then you don't have to worry, right, Justin? When you practice like that, it's not in your mind, oh, am I going to forget my kata under pressure? You're not going to forget your kata, because you've done it so many times that it's just part of you now, right? So that's the secret for all you people who are watching this wondering, how can I win?
Right on. Justin, we might have you back on in a little to discuss our other event, but there's a few people who want to talk about the tournament. So I think we'll say goodbye for now and bring you back later.
See you.
Thank you for the opportunity, you guys.
So we got Stavros and Dreedy who want to join us and talk about the tournament as well.
Grand champion, Dreedy.
Woo!
Dreedy was rocking it out.
There they are.
Hey, you two.
Hello.
Hey, everyone.
How's it going?
Yeah, so before they go, we'll just say that Dreedy is a yellow belt, and she won the grand championship because she competed in enough events and medaled in enough. And Stavros didn't win anything. He didn't even get a whiff. But the reason why he didn't win is because he had no competition. So we threw him into he's a green belt, and we threw him in the brown belt division. And when we asked him if he wanted to go in there, he was like, yeah, of course. Like, there wasn't even a bit of hesitation to go in there and fight and compete against those brown belts. So
I feel like it was one of the best fights he's done, actually. I don't know, he just upped his game, right? Fighting a brown belt.
Yeah, well, so in terms of the tournament, for both of us, but it was the first tournament that I'd ever been to. So that on its own was really cool to just see kind of how tournament is run, how the scoring is done, all these different kinds of things. So that was really cool watching everybody do all their, like watching people, we got to watch some of the black belts compete, and that was just like on a whole different level for us as Q belt. So that was really cool. And then, yeah, for me, like one of the highlights was the fact that I got put into the brown belt division in some way. Cause I mean, I went in there and I was like, well, I mean, I'm just going to do the best that I can. Like, these people have been doing it for way longer than me, and we'll just see what happens. And I was just proud to be able to do that, and proud that I was able to go in and, you know, hold my own and not just get kind of walked over. And I was like, okay, that was fun. And that was a great experience. And, you know, next time I go to a tournament, if there's other green belts, I'm like, well, no problem. I've already been in the brown belt division, so this will be good, right? So, yeah, for me, that was really a really cool opportunity, and I was just happy to be able to compete. Because at first, when I found out, oh, there's no one in my division, I was like, oh no, like I want to be able to at least compete. So that's why when you said we'll put you in the brown belt, I was like, yeah, for sure. Even even if that means I'm going against people more experienced, at least I'll get a chance to compete and practice what I've been doing. And that was the other thing for me, was doing it on a different stage, right? In the dojo, it's different. You don't have people sitting there judging you in the same way that you're when you're at a tournament. You know, when I did my kata, I feel like I blacked out for a second there. I started and then it was done and I was like, okay, well, I felt like that was good, but I just couldn't even remember almost how it went. So yeah, I mean, that's just a whole different sense of pressure doing that on a stage being graded compared to in the dojo, right? So that was really cool for me too.
One thing too, Stavros, you know, back in 2019 before COVID, one of my students, 15-year-old yellow belt, not enough people. So he got moved into the up to 18-year-old, up to purple belt. And he lost the second last fight to an 18-year-old who had him up by about 50 pounds because he punched him too hard in the face and lost on a DQ. Now, the thing is that he lost, got DQ'd, and he still holds that lesson. And it's a less, he'd have a medal he forgot about if he beat another 15-year-old his size. But when he lost through this and that, and he kind of got mad at the guy, and he's got a lesson that he took home that's better than the medal.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. And so that's a good, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
I think for me, one of the biggest highlights was just, I felt so much closer to my dojo community and the people that I spent time with at the dojo or at the tournament. Because of the tournament, I got to spend the day with a few of the other students, and Stavros and I did a team kata with one of the students as well. And it was just cool. Like, I feel like my relationships with those people are even closer now that we've competed together or watched each other compete and been there to support each other through that. I think that was one of the highlights. There was so much to learn from the people that I competed against as well. And then the people that I watched, it was just such a growth experience and very welcoming. A little bit of a side story, but my parents were actually helping out with the scorekeeping, and Stavros' parents were as well. And they said the same thing, that it was just really welcoming. Like, neither of them have ever kept score or helped out in that way. So it was completely new for them and overwhelming at times, but also just so nice because they got to see people and they got to connect with people. It was just, I knew it was going to be good, but it was so much cooler than I even expected. So that was really nice. Yeah.
So Tridi, I want to ask you, because I know you had a fight with Allison, who's the yellow belt in the Toronto club. And I know this is something Sensei talks a lot about, is the people you compete against, win or lose, deepening your relationship with them. Is that something, maybe with Allison or maybe not, but I know that she was really excited to have that experience with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, how does that feel with the people you match up with? And you'll see her again, right? You two are now trudging partners.
Yeah, it was awesome. Actually, all three of us were legacy martial arts students, just from different dojos.
Right.
So that was really interesting. So I'll see both of the competitors again. And with Allison specifically, we created a pretty good connection after the Christmas party. Is that right? Yeah, that's the dojo Christmas party is when we first met. So seeing her again at the tournament was really cool, and then competing against her was even cooler because I'm sitting there, but I'm trying to be like stone cold. I'm trying to be like, I know this person, I know she's my friend, but I'm in a tournament. But it's also hard because as we're fighting, I'm admiring all the things that she's doing, and my sparring is so interesting because there were times where I know she hit me, and I was like, oh my god, that's a hit, and I almost wanted to stop. But I was like, oh, it's not called. Okay, I have to keep going. But I want to at the same time be like, hey, that was great. Good job. Like, that was awesome. It's kind of hard to be stone cold in those moments. But it was really cool. And it definitely deepens that relationship. And I can't wait for when I see her again. But even when I left the tournament, she was, you know, I said my goodbyes. A lot of people were busy, but she was one of the main people. I was like, I want to go. I'm going to give her a hug. I'm going to tell her I can't wait to see her again. And
that's great.
It was really cool. Right. Something that I wouldn't have met, you know, if it wasn't for this. So
yeah,
those are always the best experiences.
Yeah. Sensei Copeland just put in the group chat, some of your best friends are the ones that you compete against. And that's definitely true. People like Ty Yoakum, that guy, I love that guy. He's like one of the best friends of my life. And we met each other in combat. That's how we fighting each other.
Was that the fight in Brazil, somewhere in South America? I can't remember.
I fought him in Panama and I fought him in Dominican Republic. Funny story about that would be the second time that I competed with him. So we did weapons and then we were lined up waiting for like the division to be closed. And he said, did you watch my weapons kata? And I said, Ty, I never watch the other people because I just need to be cold and focused on what I'm doing. And then when we got to empty handed kata, because of the way we were seated, he was standing next to me and he whispers to me, Randy, would you watch my kata and tell me how I do? And I said, Ty, I told you, I don't watch the other competitors because it messes me up. And then he goes, I know, but I really want to mess you up so I can beat you. that's some of the competition stuff people don't see unless you're competing, right? It's stuff like that going on.
And you build so much respect for it. Like, I know I'm standing there and I'm shaking and I'm nervous because this is my first tournament. And then I look around and I'm like, hey, like probably a lot of people are feeling this way too. And they're also just throwing themselves into it. And both the fights that I had in my division were just so good. Like they were really hard and they were really challenging. So
you're fighting legacy certain group people. So of course it's going to
be. Yep.
Yeah, it was awesome. Can't wait for the next one.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
You too. So before we go to a question from Sydney, I want to ask the senseis a question about judging. We'll let you two go and we'll see you for another one.
Yep.
So about that idea, what she just said is she felt herself get hit and almost stopped. Like, you know, Sensei Stratton said to me after, he goes, I know you hit me on that last point. I said, Sensei Stratton, I know what you're talking about, but I know twice before that last point you hit me. Like it all comes out in the wash. So let's discuss that because it isn't full contact, but it is contact. So how does one reconcile themselves with the idea that you might know you landed something, they might know you landed and the judges didn't see it? How does a competitor go, no problem, that's fine with me? Because he and I are fine with it and they're fine with it. But how does someone who goes, I don't get that scoring, think about it? Let's start with you, Sensei Legacy.
Well, you don't see everything. That's why there are five judges.
Right.
And then you have five different opinions, whether it was too hard or not hard enough to be called a disqualification. And then as the arbitrator, I was actually standing there and I can't give my opinion, right? Regardless of what I'm thinking as the arbitrator, I can't give my opinion. So unless a competitor says to me, I want to speak to an arbitrator. So just hypothetically speaking, if I see somebody get a kick in the groin, if you know what I mean? That's a disqualification. But I saw that happening and nobody asked for I was standing right there. Nobody asked, so I couldn't say anything. So it's judgment. Like you said before, it's somebody's opinion. And if it's fixed so that if you give too high a score or too low a score, we take those out and it's the average that we give you as a point that we add up. So it prevents a lot of dishonest, you know, if you don't like this guy, you don't give him a high mark, or if he's your student, you give him a high mark. You're actually defeating him instead of the other person.
Right on. Thanks, Hanchi. Sensei Dauphin?
Can you repeat the question for me, Sean?
Oh, just, you know, what we were talking about, like sometimes you feel a point on you or you know you landed one. And how does somebody who's watching and going, yeah, I don't, if it's not full contact, I'm not sure how to reconcile myself with that type of judging.
I guess if, so it depends on how the fight goes. Sean, like, I mean, when I fought Ty the first time, since I've mentioned his name, I think it was like 5-3 or 5-4. So you leave that fight knowing that that guy's really good. He could have got you, like, you know. But then there's also times where I fought people and it was like 5-0 in like 30 seconds, right? So you're like, okay, well, I clearly won that. Like everybody, I was the only one doing something in that. But then the thing that people don't know is stuff that you're trained to do And a lot of people never get there. Like, so as an example would be, I've seen Sensei Copeland do it. Sensei Legacy's trained me to do it. Things like, this is the gamesmanship of the fight. I've got a person in a corner. Only one referee or two referees can see them on the angle. And three referees I know are going to be able to see my shot. So you let them open up a little bit. And then you make sure that three, because it's a majority, you make sure three see yours and two see theirs. And then you get the point. And that's part of the skill of fighting in that realm, is knowing right. how to control the ring, where to stand, where people can see you, where they can't see you. You know, and I don't expect, like, probably most cue belts are not going to, and sure. a lot of black belts aren't going to be thinking that way.
Yeah. But no, anytime someone uses the rules of a game to win the game, fair play to them. Like, it's not a, there is a third man, so to speak. So use that to an advantage. Sensei Suino, what about you? Whether it's with actual judging of kata, or I don't know how the judo judging does or works.
Yeah, well, you know, to win a judo match, you got to score a full point. You got to score 2 half points. Got to get someone to tap, or you got to hold them down for 20 seconds. So the gray matter is in the points awarded to a throw. And a lot of times in modern sport judo, it's so fast and so complex that you're getting people in the midst of a counter, right? And it's not always clear who initiated the throw, who countered, who hit the mat first. As a competitor, your job is just to follow through and act confident, right? And do your best until they score a point against you or tell you to stop.
Yeah.
You know, afterwards you can hug your opponent and say, hey, that was a great throw. I think you got it. Right. But, but you know, you take what the judges give you, and you don't give anything away by lacking confidence or even when there's somebody really good. You know, some of the really confident competitors, sometimes they'll look up and they'll try to look at the ref and, you know, try to manufacture a point. That's okay, as long as what that doesn't, you know, if they do that and they get caught because of it, that's on them, right? Mm-hmm. But you gotta be confident, and I say make them take the score away from you, like, right? Yeah. Don't let second guessing yourself in the midst of a competition take the point away from you.
Right on. Thanks, Sensei. Sydney's gonna jump on and ask us a question about some fights before we move into some of our new topics. Sydney? Hello, Sydneth.
Hi. Sorry, I was trying to unmute there. So my question, because as we're talking about the tournament or in maybe the Crucible later on, is, you know, I feel like leading up to it, there's this anxiety, right? And even going in for a regular class, like your regular karate class or whatever training you're going to do on the way there, it's like you have that anxiety or those jitters. And I know that a lot of the value, at least, or the lessons, is it's the strength and just overcoming that, doing it anyways. But I'd be really curious to know from the people on this call, because that's kind of what, or pressure testing your training, like when you get those little bit of anxiety or jitters, when does that happen for the people on this call now? Because I know for me, it's up to when there's an unknown, or I don't know what's going to happen tonight in class, or I'm going somewhere, I don't know the people who are going to be there. But after experience and after there's less unknowns, or, you know, there's nobody's winning money at the tournament, the stakes aren't, you know, how do you guys find the ways to pressure test, or where do you still feel that anxiety in your training? Maybe I'll start with Sensei Benson and then work our way.
I'll tell you where I feel it, Sid. I feel it all the time, and I feel it in my diet. Like my mind doesn't get too stressed or whatever anymore about much. But I'll notice in my stomach that, like, a half hour before, I don't know anything. It could be going down to see Sensei Dauphin for one-on-one training that we've been doing for that many years, or Hanshi Legacy. And I'm like, wow, I feel like I didn't eat quite right. And now I'm feeling my blood sugar a little lower. Now I'm feeling, and that's not just a diet thing. That's a gut thing, going, oh, wow, I've still got anxiety around this. And I love that. I love that. Now, let's say the last tournament, I didn't have a ton of it, but it was absolutely there. And I have to be like, how's my gut? And by gut, like, I don't want to get too specific, but my gut health is more important than almost all my other healths right now. And it's the one that then will be an indicator of my anxiety. So if my food is balanced and nothing's too crazy with my lactose intolerance that showed up in my 40s, like, then I'll be fine for 12 hours. But if that's off, that 12 hours is going to be hell. That class is going to be hell. That tournament's going to be hell. But the anxiety of the thing can make it a little off. So this is a bit of a lesson for myself, as well as sort of answering your question. I have to reverse engineer. Okay, this could be an important one. Make sure your day before and morning of, you don't have the extra coffee. Make sure you don't put too much cream in anything. And so that way I'm using the actual physical, what's going into my body, combined with the knowledge that I will get anxious and often at random times. And then if that's balanced out, the anxiety doesn't matter. If I don't balance it, the anxiety will throw my gut. And now I'm literally dealing with a physical thing that sucks. So it still happens, but diet is actually the biggest way I can stave it off.
Thank you. Sensei Dofen?
The anxiety changes through the years, right? So like you said about the unknown, like, there's still an element of that when I go to the dojo with Sensei Sueno or Sensei Legacy. Like, what are they gonna, with Sensei Legacy doesn't go away. Like, at my 50th birthday, he was my final fight. I was still nervous to fight him. Like, cause when he came walking out, I was like, oh my God, like, this guy knows everything I know. He's trained me on everything and he's kicked my ass more times than anybody on the planet. Here it comes again. Right. So, and everybody's going to see him do it. Like, that's a little nerve wracking. Right. But I think for me right now, the biggest anxiety is that, I hope that Sensei Legacy and Sensei Sueno have expectations of me when I go to the dojo, that my level is going to be at a certain level. My thinking is going to be at a certain level. My technique is going to be at a certain level. And Sensei Sueno said it, like, the only opinion he cared about when he competed was Yamaguchi's. And that's, when I do Iaido, the only opinion I care about is Sensei Sueno's. And when I do my karate or any martial arts or run an event, the only opinion I care about is Sensei Legacy's. If he says I did a good job and 100 other people say that I didn't, I don't give a shit about those other 100 people who are saying that, right? As long as you get, and I want to meet that expectation. I don't want to let that fall flat. And that's where the anxiety comes now.
Thank you. Yeah, that resonates with me just also because of how I grew up. And I always felt like there was different expectations of me than the other yellow belts I was with, or whoever it is now, even just with the other black belts, I just feel like there's a different expectation. But
well, you don't get to go home to your bedroom without I show up there.
Sensei Sueno?
I'm not sure how to answer that question. Almost everything that I feel in the martial arts context is, I would describe as excitement rather than anxiety. You know, even when, like, it's more and more I'm standing across from somebody who's trained in a legacy tradition and doing a little light fighting practice with them. And I guess by all rights, I should be a little anxious about it, but I'm not. I'm kind of excited about it. The key has been, you know, I'm not going to quit. So the outcome doesn't matter, right? Like, the anxiety comes when you're worried about the outcome. I'm not worried about the outcome. I just want to get in there and then I'm going to learn something from it and have some fun. So there's very little in the martial arts that gives me anxiety. It almost all makes me excited. You know, you're keyed up. You're not going to act the same way as if you're just reading the newspaper at breakfast. But yeah, I don't know. It's been a mental switch. I don't know when it happened. Now ask me something else. If someone comes up and runs up at the street and runs up to me on the street and starts yelling at me and I don't know what's going to happen, I might be a little anxious, but you know what I mean? So in the constructed martial arts setting of that we all play in. Just having fun.
That's when I get excited, since, you know, when somebody runs up to you on the street. That's the excitement factor.
Right.
I guess I have a little follow-up. Do you think it has to do with setting your ego aside, letting go of the outcome, setting aside any ego?
That's funny, because I was going to say, maybe it's because I have so much ego in the martial arts. but it's not that, you know, that ego's funny. It's not an ego of thinking that I'm going to win. You know what I mean? Like, it's not true in BJJ rolling. It's not true in judo with my guys. It's not true in fighting. It's not ego about winning. It's ego about not quitting. Like, that happens to me at work sometimes too, when I have a challenge, you know. Then I just look at myself in the mirror and I go, are you going to quit? No. Okay. Let's get to work. I don't know how to explain that better. I need to think on it. Maybe talk. It's a good question. Thank you.
Thank you. And Honchi Legacy, who, anyone listening, I call him my Uncle Gary. I'm really curious about your answer.
Well, it's going to sound like I'm trying to be a professor or something, but I'm going to tell you what I believe. Body, mind, and spirit, you can't separate them. And, you know, when you meet a boy that you like, or a girl that you like, you know, remember in the old days, at least it was the old days for me, it's all in the stomach, right? The simple reason for that is that your very center, your very life source is 1 inch below your navel. So that's where it affects you. You may think it's food, or you may think it's something else, but it's actually you not being calm. And so that's what having a calm mind and Zen is about. If you do a lot of Zen, you'll overcome that. But myself, when I think about it during the day, but when I stand and face somebody that I know is better than I am, my body actually goes really calm, you know, and you try to empty it. And a couple of things happen. You don't get those feelings, and nobody else can read your mind or what you're going to do, because you don't have anything in there, right? It's just placid, just like flat water top. So I believe that if you do that, Neka Ino Ten is the thing there. It means to drop your mind into your stomach and relax. And relax. If you do that, if you train hard, that happens to you. So it's the Zen part coming together, your entire body coming together, that you train in martial arts. I hope I didn't mess that up.
I think on that note, Sensei, like, my anxiety is always when I'm not in action. It's not when I am in action. So yeah. It's like as I'm driving there, I have these thoughts, and that's where it's coming from. As soon as I put my gi on and step onto the floor and start moving into action, it all just kind of melts away. It's gone then at that point.
That's it. Yeah.
I had a conversation with one of our students tonight who, they say, I, you know, make all these excuses for fight night on Fridays why I can't go, or, you know, I don't show up. But tonight in class, when you just say, all right, put your fighting stuff on, we're fighting, there's no time to work it up in your mind and be anxious and not show up, because you're already on the floor. And then afterwards, it's like they had such a great night. They were so fired up. They were so excited on the drive home. Like,
I think I know who that student is. I think they might be on this call.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Ed. It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys. Love you.
Love you too.
Don't forget to visit me.
I'll see you on Saturday.
Okay. Good.
Thanks, Ed. So, Sensei Suino, you said something in there that's real important a couple times. I'm not going to quit. Let's pivot. That's a perfect segue. 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., no power, no heat, nobody quit. Talk to us about that, and then we'll go around the horn a bit on these types of ideas. And even if you weren't there, Honchi, you know what we're doing.
Yeah, it's just such a great event. I think this might be the seventh one we've done. They just keep getting better. you know, if it was boring and it was the same thing for 12 hours, I think it'd be a lot harder for people to get through. It's fast paced. We do a lot of stuff, but it's amazing. We had someone as young as 13, and I'm going to be 63 pretty soon. So almost a 50-year age span. Everybody participated fully. They emptied their cup. People from all different martial arts backgrounds. You know, it's called a crucible because everybody goes into this high pressure environment. And, you know, I say somewhat dramatically, nobody leaves unchanged. That's not just rhetoric. Going through an event like that, if at the very least, the lowest common thing that happens is you go in with anxiety or excitement, wondering if you can make it 12 hours. And when you're done, you know you can make it 12 hours, right? The hardest thing that ever happens to you, this is Joe Rogan's phrase, right? The hardest thing that's ever happened to you is the hardest thing that's ever happened to you. And the crucible is pretty effing hard. If you make it through that, a lot of stuff's going to seem a lot easier.
Yeah. Sensei Suino and Sensei Dofa, help me out on this. So for people listening who aren't exactly sure, this will diminish how specific some of the stuff was. But four hours stand up to takedown, including karate clinch, wrestling, judo, 4 hours ground game. The breaks were 4 minutes long. And every 4 hours, there was like a 15-minute break, if that. Like these weren't half an hour or hour lunch breaks. Like this was just work, go to the bathroom, get a drink. Work, go to the bathroom, get a drink. This felt more dense and more intense than 7 years ago to me. Is that by design or am I just making that up because I'm older?
It's getting better. You are getting older. I got good news. This is the best you're ever going to feel. it is better. Every single time we pay attention, right? It's like doing a comedy act. You watch the audience. You watch yourself. You think about it. You reflect on it. And the pacing of this is just, you know, knock on wood, I don't want to curse us, but we've got the pacing nailed. I feel so good about that event, about how it went. And in the early days, we had more breaks. Now there are fewer breaks. There's less fatigue. People get through. Afterwards, everybody says, holy crap, was that really 12 hours? It's kind of amazing.
It's amazing.
It was, to me, that 12 hours went by faster than the other ones. I will say I was physically more like, when I got back to Sensei Suino's house and it was time to go to bed, like there was no like, oh, I need to like read a book for a minute. It was like head hits the pillow, sleeping, wake up the next morning in exactly the same position that you laid down in, right? But I would also say that it's very deliberate. Like, you know, Sensei Suino puts a lot of thought into it. It's very deliberate. And then, again, I'm privileged that he bounces lots of thoughts off of me. And sometimes I throw out a little idea and it's a good one and he incorporates that in. And I know there's other people like Dan Holland and people that he talks to. And so it's very deliberate. The pacing, the order of events, how things happen, it's all very deliberate.
Well, I'm going to ask you two a question based off of what Sensei Suino would do on the day. And then I'm going to ask Hanshi something relevant to it that he can shed some light on his workouts like this. So Sensei Suino, let's start with you. You would ask after each session, what stands out for you most about what we did? What stands out for you most about the day, Sensei Suino?
I have to keep coming back to the fact that we have people from all different martial arts schools, all different ages, all different genders. Right. The beauty of martial arts is people work together. The only judgment they're getting is the judgment on the quality of their participation. But we had new people this time. We had people from dojos that hadn't been to the crucible before. And they've hung in. Not only did they hang in physically, but they were productive, positive. They helped each other. Empty your cup and help one another for 12 hours. Everybody lived into that. That to me was the highlight of the whole event.
Sensei Dofan?
I've thought about this actually, Sean, a little bit. I haven't even shared it with anybody. I've just been keep running the event over. One of the things that I'm super proud of and I really liked is just how the Legacy Shoranru people and the JMAC people, they're really like the same people now. Like when they step on the floor together, like, and I no longer see it anymore like, oh, Dreedy's talking to Amber. I'm just like, oh, there's Dreedy and Amber.
Right.
Oh, you know, there's Richard and Benson talking to each other. Oh, there's Mancini and Sydney talking. Like, I don't, like, they all know each other so well now. Like, they're all so connected to each other. They all trust each other so much. And I really feel like those two dojos, they just set the tone. You'd be an outsider if you came and you didn't engage like Sensasino was talking about, because the rest of that group is going to be like so melded and working together. And that stands out for me, is that, and that didn't happen overnight. That happened because Sensei Legacy and Sensasino met each other 30 something years ago and have been very deliberate about keeping the relationship strong over a long period of time. Sensasino's driven thousands of times here. Sensei Legacy's driven thousands of times there. JMAC people have driven here thousands of times. Legacy Sharon Rue people have driven back in that direction thousands of times. And now at this point, when you go to the Crucible, you can't replace that history or those connections when they get on the field and start training.
That's beautiful. Before I go to my question to Hanshi, I'm going to throw in mine, and it's actually two. One is a bit of what you just talked about, Sensei Dauphin, which is like really early on in karate, 3 years in, I no longer live near either of my senseis. And so very quickly, the drive to karate, or however I got there, had to be as enjoyable to me as the karate, or else I'd have to quit or find a teacher closer to me. And driving down with Russell and Marvin and Andre and driving back was so much part of the trip. Like, it was part of the martial arts. And I mean, how many hours have we all logged in cars? And so the big thing about me is the lifestyle includes the before and after, the hotel room and all that stuff. And that was really amplified this weekend. But I said this to you, Sensei Suino, I said it to you, Sensei Dauphin. My take home is four words: judo is no joke. I hit that mat so hard so many times and I got rocked, like rocked. And maybe my phone heard me, but I saw a TikTok video on the night on Sunday when I got back, and it was like a street fight and in a parking garage, and a guy picks up another guy and flails him in a pretty good version of a street judo throw, and the guy's on the ground unconscious. And I was like, that looks about right. Like, if there weren't a sprung floor and a mat and an ability to break fall, I think I'd have gotten knocked out seven times training with control, with people who are trying to show me the throw, not hurt me with it. So judo is no joke, and driving to and fro these things is just part of the joy of the thing. Hanshi Legacy, what's the most intense physical training you can remember in all your time training?
All the time with Benny Allen. Every day, every class was like that. But I'd like to say something about the event you were speaking of. Personally, the main overall gain of having something like that is that you bring yourself to a place you've never been before, and the door is closed behind you, and you will never be that person you were before that again. It just brings you so much further than you've already been. Like, who has really trained 12 hours straight? Like, that's a tough one. I'm not sure if I've ever done that, but I've trained some long times, you know, maybe 5 hours or something, but nobody's ever had anything like that event. But I think it changes you as a martial artist and as a person. You know, you can achieve certain things, makes your mind stronger, makes your mind overcome your body. So, and that's the way it should be, you know, that your body listens.
Hanshi, that's why we always make you go last. You said, it brings you to a place you've never been before. It closes the door behind you. We might as well just end this call. That was awesome.
Seriously.
Well, you know, the thing I was going to say is, you know, Sensei Legacy has crafted this black belt grading that, you know, 45 years or 50 years of people have had to go through. And I can promise you, like, if you get a black belt in Legacy Sharon Rue and you do that test, when you're done it, you will never be the same after that again. Not mentally, physically, or spiritually. You will be different when 24 fights later, nonstop, and you're getting your ass kicked and you have to throw one hard technique or two, or he will not end the fight. And then you come to the dojo a week later and he's like, okay, Randy, fight that guy. What do you mean, Sensei? Just one person? Okay. Like, you know, like your mind is no longer in that place, right? It just has gone to a different spot.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some folks who want to pop on and chat with us. So let's start with Sensei Dan Holland III, one of my absolute favorite training partners on the planet. Can't wait to see his face.
Love that guy. When I was rolling with him, we were talking about it feels like he's got like six legs and four hands. And every time you get one hand off you, the other, it's back on you in some other spot. It's like fighting a super strong octopus.
Love it.
How are you doing tonight, Sensei?
I'm doing very well. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Better now that we see you.
100%. Yeah. So, Holland Sensei, some takeaways from the Crucible. What did you really enjoy? What left an impression on you?
You know, a lot of the legacy striking stuff really left an impression on me. I was talking to Randy about, you know, just like the different power sources of the front kick, the round kick, and the side kick. And I feel like just the information that we talked about with the side kick, about the rotation of the heel afterward, that's not something I've really been doing, right? Well, no, it's not something I've been doing at all. And I've just been playing with this ever since. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, I remember you said to me that one of the reasons why you were never interested in karate is because you never saw good karate before.
and I didn't mean to like disparage karate, but it's like I didn't know anyone who really did it. It was just like, let's memorize a whole bunch of moves in a sequence and then let's memorize another one. It's like, that's cool, but I wanted to do something else. And then start learning about people who actually like, yeah, but when you move like this, you can generate power in a certain way. You can use it in a certain way. Then it becomes very interesting, you know? And I guess I was lucky in the sense in terms of like jiu-jitsu and judo and even iaido, because from the very beginning when I started, I had people who could tell me this is what it is and this is why. And it was fascinating. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And now karate is the same way.
What else, Dan?
Let's see. What else? Man, it was just a great.
It's okay if you say like you really liked rolling with me. That would be really good.
I loved rolling with you guys. Like the legacy guys were awesome. Like you guys. Even some who have had very, very little grappling. You know, I think a few people I talked to are like, yeah, you know, wrestling in high school or, you know, just only grappling I've done is in the Crucibles. Hey there, buddy. This is Sir Galahad.
Oh, he's awesome. Look at that guy.
So we do some grappling too. Okay, then, bud. It was just a great experience. And, you know, what's funny to me is that it really, looking back on it, it was a long time, but it really didn't feel like it was a long time until I got in the car and started driving home. It went by way faster than I expected it to.
Yep.
Well, dude, you did an outstanding job. Like your wrestling segment was like, Sensei Serino said to me, I just love watching him teach wrestling. I love watching him. And that single leg pick you did on Mancini, he went down like a fucking ton of bricks. It was like, he was standing there 1 second. I think it even surprised you, Dan, how fast he went down.
I didn't mean to throw him, but yes, it was a good pick.
Very gentlemanly. You threw him very gentlemanly. And a lot of grab and snatch or snatch and grab, whatever.
Yeah, that's right. That those words may have been crafted beforehand just for a little bit of humor. So
that was an incredible concept. It's a game changer for even just getting that arm drag or you know, locking up that collar tie, like game changer.
Yeah. I mean, watch, you know, college wrestlers, Olympic wrestlers, they're like throwing hooks. Like you would not want to be, you would not want to get
bang, hit. Bang. Yeah.
Lucky Mancini's built the way he is.
Yeah, right? Beast.
He's a beast.
He's a beast.
Can't wait till the next Sensei.
Oh, man. Me? Yeah, me too. It'll be awesome.
Well, I'm going to see you in 2 weeks, right? You're going to be coming?
In 2 weeks, yes. I will be down there. Yep, okay. For some title.
Work on Miller. We got to get him down here for that camp.
I will try.
Yep. See you, brother. Good. Thank you.
Thanks, man.
See you later. Thanks, guys.
And now we have the fabulous Sensei Mike Russell, who was my driving partner down and back. And he's going to pop on and share some thoughts with us too about the weekend. Woo!
Big Mike.
What's up?
Hey, hey.
Depth of field background.
Yeah, yeah. Got to make it look good. Yeah, so if I'm looking up here, it's because I got two different monitors going. Man, was that ever a good time. That was ever a good time. The drive was such a good time. The drive, as you said, Sensei, half the time for me. Like, that was half of the event for me. I could have, people asked me, why didn't you fly into Detroit? That's why. I added 8 hours to my trip of travel for that, which is great. Love that so much. I mean, all the judo black belts and all the very experienced people from other styles and how crazy deadly they were with me, but also so incredibly graceful was really impressive for me. Just seeing how fluid that was. You watch anybody who is a master of their craft do what they do with grace, and a level of ease that is so earned. That was a joy to see all the time. So when I'm rolling with people, when I'm watching Dan Holland just throw people to the ground super hard, that was all very, very satisfying and looked very, very easy while we did it. That was great.
Listen, that guy's a stud, man. Like, that Dan Holland, if you've never trained with him before in any art, he's going to kick your ass all over the floor at everything. He's so good at everything. Yeah. I hate that guy. And he's nice. And he's handsome, too. Can't stand it.
And squirrels just come and walk up on him, climb up on him in the mountains.
How about you, Mike? Did you get uncomfortable at any point during there? The training?
Uncomfortable is, I mean, physically, sure, I would say.
I can tell you one time, I know.
Yeah?
When my legs were wrapped around your neck.
Yeah, yeah, plenty of times like that. Especially in those moments where I'm like, I know that I'm already far gone. I'm going to see if I can fight this. No, it's gone. That's a tap for sure. There's, you know, at this point for me, like I know that I'm going to be physically uncomfortable. I know that I'm going to be in positions where I'm not in my wheelhouse. I know I'm not going to look good. I know I'm not going to perform well, but what's great is that that's not the point. For me, like, the point is to learn, the point is to experience something new, something different, to change. So I think the only thing that I was really, you know, that was a little different for me was just after we did some sparring with some good high level, you know, BJJ people there, you know, and they all said afterwards, they're like, oh, thank you so much. That was really great. You know, that was a good fight. Thank you so much, Sensei. When I went and changed my BJJ gi and came back out, and then I was standing in front of them, it took them a second to recognize me. And then they were so excited to see me, you know, and I was like, do you mind helping me out? Cause I have no idea what I'm doing. That was really nice. That was really nice. Everybody was so welcoming and so, so generous, and so helpful. And it's really nice to be able to be in that position to go like, hey, I'm as helpless as a baby. I trust you. Can you help me, you know, help me understand the lesson?
Yeah. Well, you did the same for them. So Sensei Legacy, just after I was done teaching some concepts, I taught some of the principles of movement, defensive strategies, some offensive technique. And then our black belt Sensei Legacy, I lined them up out there. And then I just divided the room by the number of people, by the number of black belts, and had them line up. And then I made them all fight for like 2 minutes, and our guys were really nice to them and didn't smash them. So then we got the same privilege when it was time to start getting thrown around and grappling with them. Yeah. Allegedly, I hit Richard hard, allegedly, but I think he hit me hard more times than I hit him.
Somebody tagged me in the ribcage pretty good at some point in the day, and I really want to say that it was Andre, but I can't really remember because I'm still processing everything that happened in the weekend. Like, I've got, you know, 4 pages of my journal that I'm going through when I remember something. I've got this nice box that yells judo time on here in the corner. Everything's great.
I love that, Russell, you know, because there's so many things that can just get lost if you wait even another week. You know, that'll just evaporate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to tag on one more thing. And then it was just that I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to roll with you, Sensei Dauphin, to roll with you, Sensei Benson. And I'm real sad I didn't get to roll with you this time, Sensei Suino, because I did with you the very first time I went to the Crucible. So I feel very, very good about being able to do that. And I want to be able to do that again as soon as possible.
Next time, brother.
Great.
Yeah. So you can feel as helpless as I did when he tapped me on the shoulder and said, okay, Randy, it's time to roll with me.
Yep, love it. Yeah.
Awesome, Russell.
Thanks.
So we have so much coming up. Let's talk about it. And it's not just for us, by the way. I mean, the next thing we'll talk about includes Sensei Suino and Sensei Dauphin hosting the event in Kitchener. But after that, we're going to go to some other members of the audience and things they have coming up. So let's talk about 2 weeks from now. Sensei Dauphin, you want to start?
I can, like, yeah, if you want me to. Yeah, so we're going to do this event. Sensei Suino is going to come and teach. It's going to be this time strictly Iaido. Saturday will be 10:30 until 3. Minimal breaks. It's not going to be in this dojo. It's going to be at a church because there'll be too many people with swords to be trying to move them around in here. But it's at a church very close to here. And then Sunday morning, 9 until noon. And the one thing that I've received some feedback on is stuff like people saying, oh, well, I don't know how to do Iaido. Well, that's why you should come to the seminar, right? Like, if you don't know how to do Iaido, that's why you should come. And one of the things I want to say to the people who are listening, a lot of times Sensei Legacy took me to different seminars to go train with people that I wasn't interested in that art at all. Iaido was one of them. Right. I was a karate guy. Like, I just was like, nope, I just want to do karate. And Sensei Legacy said, well, I'm doing Iaido and you're going to start doing Iaido too. Right. So then I started doing Iaido and then I fell in love with it. But there are other seminars. We've gone trained with people who are Chinese practitioners of martial arts or, you know, Filipino practitioners of martial arts. And I don't regret ever training with any of those elite people, even though I don't do that art anymore. And it's come back later. Like, people will say, oh, there's this guy, Sifu Graysonen. And I'm like, oh yeah, I trained with him once. Oh, you trained with him? Yeah, I went to a seminar and trained with him. And I've always found value in having the opportunity to go train with these different instructors, even if I didn't follow up after, right? And for this one, you might find somebody, I don't know where, like, you might find somebody as good as Sensei Suino in Iaido, but you're not going to find anybody better. So you might as well come to this. And if you're going to get an introduction to Iaido, this is the best place to do it,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion.
And Sensei Suino, what do you want to add?
Just that Randy's absolutely right. You can be a beginner, you can be intermediate, you can be advanced. You know, we focus on the real deep structural approach to Iaido that Yamaguchi sensei taught me. And it's pretty uncommon in the world of Iaido. So, you know, when we did Capital Conquest, we had people all the way up to, I think, Godan in perfectly legitimate Iaido systems, very good Iaido players, but they all commented that they learned something. They were able to see things in a new way. That's the whole point. It's a really unique system. A really unique approach to Iaido, and the venue's great. We've got a great schedule set up. I just think people should come, enjoy it, learn a little bit of something, and especially if, like a lot of martial arts schools, you'd like to have a sword curriculum at your school, it's a great time to come and get started and see if that fits with your agenda or not.
Love that.
Sensei Legacy, do you have any comments? You've trained with Sensei Sueno a lot. You got a black belt from him. You also trained with Yamaguchi Sensei. Do you have any comments on why people should go train with Sensei Sueno at this?
Well, it would be all the same as you. When I first saw him, he was... So I've also renewed our sensei-student relationship. I'm going to be continuing from here on in. I need to spend some of my more advanced years doing something a little bit calmer, and it helps calm the mind. I would say yes. If you're gonna experience anything, you should try to get as good quality as experience as possible. That way you'll see the true art form. Like normally Sensei Sueno does a bit of a demonstration before doing the seminar. And I would coax you to sit there and just watch that. And what you're gonna see there, what I notice most of all is the calmness or the empty-mindedness and the control of the weapon where the sword becomes part of him. And you'll see the art. I've seen a lot of people don't judge that kind of martial art by stuff that some of the people do in tournaments where they're flipping the sword around and doing all that. You see the classical side of the eye, and you'll see that you never want to be standing in front of somebody with a 5-foot razor who has that calm mind to deliver that sword on will. And if that's what you're looking for, it's an elite art. It's not as common as karate. That's why there are very, very few in his position or his rank or with his skill. It's definitely a place to begin and to end your career.
Thanks, Hanchi. Let's talk about June. Let's talk about friend of the program, former guest, Sensei Copeland. Sensei Dofei, you want to tell us about his event?
I'm really hoping that a lot of people go to that event. I'm hoping all the people that came to the Matsumura Challenge, I hope every single person that came to the Matsumura Challenge, every single one, including the referees, all go to Sensei Copeland's tournament. They're like sister tournaments or brother tournaments. Like, the competition is just as fierce. It is just as fair. It is equally or better run and organized. I said it in the black belt meeting, like, a lot of the things we're doing at the Matsumura Challenge, we borrowed from Sensei Copeland, or he let us have them for our event. And man, he supports us with everything, and I just want to support him the same way. I just want him always to feel like when he calls us and says, I need you guys to come and help, that he only has to ask one time and then we all come and help. Like, that's because that's the way he's always been with us. And I just always want to be that same way with him. Yeah. And you'll meet some new people at his tournament that, because he has some different people that come to his people we've had on this show that go to it. Like Sensei Clayton, Frank Clayton is going to be there. I'm excited to see him. It'll be awesome to give him a hug and exchange some pleasantries. So that's what I want to say. Sensei Legacy, you want to say anything about Sensei Copeland's tournament? You've gone as many times as me.
It is a mirror tournament of ours, or we are a mirror of him. Just like I always say, I'm a white Conroy Copeland. We are so much alike in a way, and such good friends that we're hoping, actually, if you want to mention that, we're hoping that we can get a couple of other schools to make this a larger event so that the events are related, whilst you will be still grand champion of mine, but there will be, if you go to these three, there will be another type of championship that will reap in more rewards. Yeah. I've been going there for years, and it's as good as ours, if not better.
Amazing. And why don't we stay with you, Hanshi Legacy, and why don't you take us into the summer in the Legacy Shorinru Karate Camps?
Okay. We've been running a summer camp for, geez, almost 50 years, if not 50 years. And this year it's going to be, you actually camp out with us, or you can just come to day camp. You can get a hotel room and whatever, but camping together is a lot of fun. It gives us a lot more. There will be where children are involved. We'll be doing fighting this year, and I'm hoping to have a little bit of a black belt seminar on one of the weekends, so that they can learn or try to understand the white crane. The white crane is a very important part of your karate. It unfortunately has never reached other styles other than Shorinru, simply because the days of Funakoshi, when Funakoshi left, it was because of complicated reasons, but Matsumura never showed him the crane, so that when karate left Japan, it never had the crane. And that's why, you know, when you, and in the other arts, when you get to be a fourth dan, there are no more katas. There are six dans. We don't learn any more katas from your style. Your style is done. That's because it was sort of, it lacks the white crane. And it opens up your katas even more. There are techniques that are hidden in your shorin or in your shorokan that are not revealed unless you learn the white crane. And I can reveal that to you simply because of my sensei, Anthony Sandoval. So, and that will be July the what, 8th or 9th to the 15th, somewhere in there. If you want any information, just call or get in contact with Randy or myself.
Amazing. And, you know, for anybody watching or listening, like, we have talked a lot about our events, this show, and it's not, this show is in no way designed to promote, while we do want to share the stuff. But so much of the genesis of this show during COVID was we can't get together. So we'll do it digitally. So now that we can get together, and, you know, Sensei Suino is technically not that close, but he's 4 hours away from Toronto. So he's actually not far. He's closer than Montreal. So all of a sudden it's like, wait, if you're around, you can just do these things. Because we did spend 2.5-3 years saying, can't wait to see you. And so it's less about promoting and more like going, we now get to see each other, put hands on, sweat in the same room. And more importantly, see three-dimensionally what we're talking about with these or the other people we want to train with some martial arts. Like even when Hanshi Sai just came down for that seminar, it's like, it's lovely to talk to the man, but it's way better to be in a room moving with the man. So we'll go around the horn unless there's anything you want to add about the camp, Sensei Dauphin.
Just, you know, one of the things about the camp is there are people on this call, many black belts, and a testament to that camp is that people like Mike Russell, who was just on this call, or Sydney Dauphin, like, these people grew up at that camp and they come every year. They come back. They started when they were like 7-8 years old coming to camp. And now they come back as adults because they just like being there so much. Like, you come there and the history and the joy of people just walking into that campground and seeing each other, it's incredible. And, you know, you say it, Ben, the time's going to go by anyway. You might as well get there 1 year, see if you like it. Yep. I guarantee you're probably going to come back the next year and probably the next year after that and probably the next year after that. Yeah. Great relationships have been formed. Like, a lot of good knowledge and training, but equally as important, lots of great laughs and relationships. I mean, I can't tell you how much Sensei Legacy and I have sat by that campfire and laughed. And you too, Benson, and Josh Hanley and Nick McLaren, like, sitting there watching cranes, like, just so many funny things have happened there. It's just an awesome place. I love it there. It's one of my favorite weeks of the year, every year.
So much what I hear tonight. There's a saying in the Porsche community, the best thing about Porsches is the people, because you just end up bonding over these things, but you actually bond with each other. And, you know, the martial arts are great, but the best thing about the martial arts is the people. It'd be pretty hard to keep a white belt in the dojo if it weren't for the people. Eventually it becomes our own separate from that, but what a beautiful thing. Let's go around the horn just to say goodnight. And Hanshi, what do you want to say to us and to the people listening?
Well, just basically about those camps is that in the evening, sitting around the campfire, exchanging stories, getting to know somebody more, the laughs, sometimes we find ourselves rolling on the ground, exchanging information, a lot of different things take place other than just, you know, doing the fighting or doing a weapon, or is that camaraderie, that friendship. That's about it for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Hanshi. Sensei Suino?
It's been fun talking about these events. There's so much going on, and you know, nobody on this call needs to be reminded that it's living the martial arts life is just an absolute great thing. You have an opportunity to get together with people, make yourself better, make them better, sweat, bleed, and cry, laugh, just have a great time. We're lucky to be in this community, and the vibrancy of what we're doing right now is unparalleled. So hang on to your hats, folks. It's fun now. It's going to get a lot more fun as time goes on.
I love that, Sensei. You know, Sensei Dofan?
I'll say just two quick things that we didn't mention. So on June 24th is that Sensei Suino's 17-year anniversary at JMAC. So there'll be more information on that coming out, but be very exciting to go down there. He is now copying us, Sensei Legacy, and doing a banquet style like we do at our Christmas party. So
shamelessly. I'm shamelessly stealing that concept.
Yeah,
we I haven't. Got it. Somebody.
Yeah. We haven't talked about it. Sorry, go ahead.
That's, are you making that a big event? Is anybody invited to like an anniversary or something?
Yeah, you are 100% invited, of course.
Great.
The May, Sensei Legacy, Sensei Suino, and I will all be teaching at the World Kabuto World Convention in Lévis, Quebec. We'll all be up there. That's one of Hanshitarian's events. If you've never been to one of Hanshitarian's events, he's definitely Canada's greatest promoter, if not one of the greatest promoters in the world, and a super nice guy and a fine martial artist as well, like extraordinary person. So we'll be going to support him and very proud to be there doing that. I want to end on one note, Sean, about, I got asked a couple of times, like, why do you put all this work in? Like, why do you put all this work in? What is the reward of that? Like, you know, honestly, it's not what people think. Like that little kid, Lucas, who came up at the end of the Matsumura Challenge, Sensei, with his mom and his sister. And they had like just a little treat bag for Sensei Legacy and I, and they wanted to take pictures. I'm sorry, I fucking love that. Like, I want that kid to do karate forever. I want that kid to do, and if that event helps him to be engaged, creates fond memories for him, to me, that's the most important thing, is bringing that community of people together to engage and seeing that next generation of people like come along. Like, and that's a little kid, but like seeing like the Silent Tiger guys, Ryan Feist and Mitchell Street, and then, you know, Ryan Potter, how good Ryan Potter judged and center refereed. I love seeing that development, and you got to provide those spaces for people to grow into them. And that's a thought and a something I want to just throw out there to people is, if you're thinking about doing an event or something, give it a shot, try and do it for the right motivation. And if one person comes and gets something out of it, you'll be happy that you did it. And the next time you do it, if you double it and double it and double it, then you're just doing more and more better things for the martial arts community.
Love that. Double it and give it to the next person. It's so funny because that's actually what I wanted to go out on myself was like, just say yes. Like I, you know, sprained a thumb and popped a rib 3 weeks ago. And since then we did the Hanshi Sayi, competed in the tournament, went down for the Crucible. And then we've got the grading this weekend. Like it's just every week there's something, and that's on top of teaching the classes and my own training. And this isn't about me, but it's about just say yes and let the lifestyle carry you along, because there's a river of other people doing this who are like, great, let's do this. Great. sprained thumb means I don't get all the best chokes. That doesn't matter. Nobody cares. It's being on the mats, being on the floor, doing the training. And then, you know, that goes even to one of my yellow belts who came down to the Hanchi Sai, literally 5 minutes before. She goes, so what are we doing tonight? And I was like, it's this Goshindo, it's Hanchi Sai. She goes, okay, cool. You just said there was an event. And I said, sure, I'll just go because I should start saying yes to these things. And I was like, you're never going to forget this event. This is now part of your training, part of the way you move, part of your life. And sometimes, I don't know, I can't even remember a dud we've been to. I guess there have been some, but it's never a dud because of the trip itself and because we're there with each other. So if you're listening and you're not sure why we're talking about events you can't get to, think of the ones in your neighborhood. If you're in California, if you're in Belgium, and just go this weekend and say yes and go check that one out. I'm going to do my thanks right now and then throw it back to Sensei Dauphin for our upcoming. So I just want to say thanks to the people who run this show, Andre Sadashev, Robert Schlumsky, who's behind the scenes tonight, Alden Adair, Justin Shea, Jesse Blay-Vitow, Dan Holland III, who is with us tonight. And I've been forgetting Mike Russell. I'm sorry, Mike, you know, that's not on purpose because I love you and the help you give us. So thank you to all those people who are keeping the show running behind the scenes. Sensei Dauphin.
He's a loser. He dropped off already because he had something else to do. So he didn't hear your...
Sorry. Let me just... Mike Russell.
We off the list.
Off the list. You can see how advanced our behind-the-scenes cues are.
What's coming up? One thing I want to say is our website is working. We're actually... People are going... Thank you for going to the website and suggesting people to come. And... That's Sensei Banfield from Karate Connects went on there and he suggested Sensei Bill Wolf. So we got him coming on next Thursday. And then the Thursday after that is the 16th. Sensei Suino will be traveling. I think you're in LA, yep. Sean. So what we're going to do that week is we're going to release one of the micro topics of, it was one we did with Sensei Copeland about funny things that happened in the dojo. So it's only 30 minutes long. You'll enjoy it. I did. If you didn't, you're a loser. So anyway, then after that, we have Sensei Ron Fagan. And then I'm really excited. Well, I'm excited about all of them, but I'm very excited about having Sensei Gary Hales come on at the end of the month. He was at the tournament as well. And Sensei Legacy and I used this as an opportunity to beg and plead and bother him until we wore him down and he said yeah, I'll come on. He had his reasons why he didn't want to, but they weren't good enough reasons to stop Sensei Legacy and I from badgering him until he said yes.
Love that. Thanks, Sensei Dauphin. Thanks, Senseis, for the chat tonight. Thanks for everybody who joined us in real time and for all you listening later. We're so glad you're with us. We don't know who you are, but hopefully we'll meet you one day out and about, and have a great night or great day or whenever you're listening. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
All right.